Yeah. Okay.
Where is it? What page?
Vav Amud Aleph.
Vav. Amud Aleph. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
The bottom of the page?
Bottom of the page, where it says Masa Brah. All right. So okay. I'll ask the Shaila about the previous Gemara that we had learned. And he brings a somewhat similar passage. It says, V'yelu shabin chaseihen nisrofes. Says the following, in the following cases, where the Soka has to bring a mincha, which as you remember is a meal offering, and which differs from the ordinary meal offering in several ways. It's not made of solus, fine flour, which is always, what the basic ingredient of the mincha is, but instead it's made of tzi'orim. It's made out of oats, according to some. The basic reason is because this is not because of any joyous occasion, and so this is the reason why it's made out of oats, in order to show, because oats are considered inferior to fine wheat, the solus, okay? And another thing that says that's different over there, it says that the priest is lo yitzok alof shemen, he's not allowed, lo yitzok alof shemen, he's not allowed to pour olive oil on it, which normally was done. And the yoyotain alof levona, also levona, which is one of these spices, you know, that they would put on the mincha, and which was first put on and then it was removed and thrown into the burned down the mizbeach. So this one also doesn't have that. So what the ordinary menachos have, this one does not have. But still, it is a mincha, and as a mincha, it has to be sanctified by putting it into a sacred vessel, as we say, you know, a kli kodesh, right? And then the kohen still has to take what we say below kubzo, in other words, he takes like the a handful of flour from it that is burnt also on the mizbeach, and then finally it's written in connection with the average mincha. It says, "Noseres b'dam mincha yichla arin uvonav." In other words, the rest of the mincha, whatever remains in the flour, so the priests, the kohanim, they eat over there. So, and of course, it has to be eaten by walking kodesh, matzoh lo'ed. In other words, it has to be actually in the temple precincts, but they do because it's holy. Okay. So, here, what he's saying, huh?
Martha?
Yeah.
It would be easy if you would be over here.
Oh, we have. Yeah. So, come over, we have plenty of light. Okay. So, he says over here that the following cases, if the woman brings the korban mincha, you know, as a soto, so instead of the mincha being, accepted as a holy offering, instead the mincha is burnt. Where is it burnt? The answer is that they have a place called the Beis Hadeshin, and over there they would burn whatever was impure. In other words, if the korban became, unclean or something like that, it was rejected for one reason or another, then it would be burnt over there. And that was the Shefach HaDeshen. This was already, it was sort of like outside the Beis HaMikdash precincts, because this, was no longer holy, so it had to be destroyed over there in an area which was not sanctified. Okay? So, one of the cases that Rav brings, of course he brings it from a Baraisa. So the answer is, first of all, he says, Omeris Tumeyan. Alright? If a woman says, I committed adultery. Okay? Or, and or slash. Okay? This is a whole argument we've had the past couple of weeks. What does it mean?
What does what mean?
Okay. Does it mean that this is a separate clause, which is what my feeling is, or does it mean that she's the Me'ani because of the fact? But I still think that really they're two separate items, okay? Namely, that witnesses came to say that, she had committed adultery, right?
Right.
So, okay. Of course, before, in the previous Baraisa, on the previous page, we had more examples over there. But here, this is what they stop at. And then they ask the same question that's parallel to the question that was asked before. Da'osu Edom Amos, when do these witnesses appear? Evelyn on the comment, the Sigdash, if we say that it was before the flour, you know, the oat flour, the barley flour that was going to be used for the mincha was put into a Kli Kodesh, in other words, had not yet been sanctified, then tipet l'chulin. Then in that particular case, let it become chulin. By chulin, it means it loses its sacred status. So what is the din of mincha if it, you know, becomes chulin, yotze l'chulin? So the answer is that it is sold. The money is used in order to buy a new mincha. Okay, so in that case, all right, you say so. All right, so if they came before, you know, it had even been put in the Kli Kodesh in order to sanctify it, then in that case, sell it for chulin, and that's it. So we have to say Elo Lebos of the Kodesh. We have to say that these witnesses came after it had already been put into a Kli Kodesh. Because remember, if it says that, you know, that mincha seder, they have to be burnt, so obviously, when is it going to be burnt? Not if they came beforehand, because it had not yet achieved the status of holy. Okay? So, we have to say that it's after it had already been placed in the Kli Kodesh, which makes it, you know, into a sanctified mincha. Okay? Even though the rest of the steps haven't yet been taken from it, but the very act of sanctification, this is what it is. Of course, I do have to tell you, the Mishnah, the Menachos, and so on, the Gemara Menachos, they go into a whole detail, you know. And you have it also in the Mishnah, the Ilah, meaning that you trespass, you know, by taking something which is holy and, you know, you use it for profane use. Okay? So, they speak also, you know, about different things that you use in order to sanctify, whether it's a sacrifice or a mincha, which is also, you know, it's a form of sacrifice too. Namely, you have the intention of doing it, okay? In your mind,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And then after that, you know, then you actually take, and let's say if it's a korban, you know, an animal sacrifice, you have to bring the animal, you know. If it is, as in the case of minchas, you have to bring the flour that's going to be used for the mincha and so on. So, when does it actually become sanctified? So, in the case of the minchas, we said it's when it's put into a kli. This is the
Kli Kodesh.
Right, in the Kli Kodesh, right. So, we have now come to the conclusion that the witnesses must have come then after it had already been sanctified. So he says, E Amrit Bishlamo. If we hold the following opinion, and this is what the whole argument was on the previous side of the page, that mayim bayit kinoi soil, in other words, that the water, the mayim haba orarim, really prove as to whether the woman is tahor, tahora or tameo, whether she really is innocent or whether she is guilty, then in that case, so he says, Alma, from this we see that Bas Mikdash and Mikrofi, that this mincha deserves to become sanctified and it also to be offered up, as we said, you know, through the various steps, that part of it has to be offered on the Mizbeach and the rest of it by the Kahanim and so on and so forth. The Chi Kodesh, and if it was sanctified, then the Ikara Shabbi Kodesh. Then we have to assume that it was absolutely correct to put it into the holy vessel because it rightly belongs to be sanctified. Deserves to be sanctified because of the virtue of the fact that Vayim Bodkin I saw, and so this is all part of the ritual that's required for it in order to prove her innocence, right? So, and for this reason, in other words, that Edom have now come after it's already sanctified, and they testify, hey, this woman is the mayor, she has committed adultery.
Right.
So in that case, mincha is trafis. Well, in that case, it's absolutely right to take this mincha and say, okay, it's become invalidated. It's lost its sanctity by virtue of the fact that, you know, the woman definitely is guilty, and therefore the mincha should be burnt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's already
even if Edom come
yeah.
and say she has
committed adultery.
Committed
adultery. Right.
Does she still have to drink the Maimonides?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
This we learned on the previous side. We'll take a look.
Take a look
at the Mishnah that we learned on Omid Aleph over there. It says, V'elo asuris b'lei achol b'truma, right? Talking over there about a woman, you know, who's married to a Kohen. But the basic idea will still hold true, even though the Mishnah speaks specifically about Truma. And it gives the following cases. In other words, where the woman herself says to the husband that I have committed adultery. Or Shabbat Adam Shehitameya, right? Witnesses come. Or the Homeris Aini Shoso, if the woman says, I refuse to drink the wine on our rim. Or Shabbat in the Ritz Lashkesa. Could be that the husband doesn't want to put through the ordeal. In that case, there is no ordeal, okay? But we should follow more little bit there. Or the last case is where the husband has intercourse, right, with her after they're already on the way to Yerushalayim, okay? So, obviously, by doing that, he automatically cancels out the validity of the Bain Hamor.
Right.
Okay. All right. Ella, but what was the opposite? If you say Yamrit, if you hold the opinion that Ainam Mayim Bot Kenoiso, that in other words, the Mayim Hamorim is not a definite proof. No, so for those of you who missed last week, it was a whole discussion. Okay, there is a difference of opinion between Rav Sheshes, Rav Shimon, and so on and so forth. Rav Sheshes is of the opinion that the water is not an absolute proof. Why isn't the Mayim Hamorim an absolute proof? Because he advances various reasons why it may not be, okay? One of them is the fact that the Edim were b'medina sayon. In other words, they were far off, not there in order to give any testimony. So the woman, you know, she may have committed adultery, but the Mayim Hamorim is not going to prove it as long as witnesses are not there. This was one explanation. Okay?
Are you implying, therefore, that the Mayim Hamorim doesn't work unless there are witnesses?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct.
All right.
Okay. Remember, we have to review once more. What is the procedure? Okay? First one, as we said, is Kinui. The husband says he doesn't like what's going on over there, and witnesses say that she's been too friendly with so-and-so. Okay? So then what does he have to do? He has to go and he has to warn her, right? And he has to say, I refuse to let you talk to so-and-so, and don't you even dare, become secluded with him, okay? So then what happens? Well, as we said, if she talks to him in the marketplace, there's no problem. There's no adultery involved, just talking, okay? But if she's in seclusion with him, so then, we say, if we have a witness who says, I saw her go in over there, and she was there long enough to have committed something or other, then in that case, what does he do next? He has to take her to the Beis Din. As we'll learn today, tonight, the Mirza Hashem.
Right.
So he has to take her to the Beis Din, the local Beis Din, and there, you know, say, look, I warned her, right? And witnesses came and they told me, not only that she was talking, but also, again, witnesses came to testify to the fact that she was in seclusion and so on and so forth. And so, then at this particular point, the Beis Din will decide that, okay, then the husband has the right to go and take her to Yerushalayim in order to have a test. Okay? So that this is the procedure. But if you don't go through the various steps to begin with, well, it's gonish. Now, what if there are no witnesses?
Yeah.
Right?
What if just the
all right.
Just if
so
you have
we learned
a suspicious
there is a
husband.
Possibility, right, that the husband might be suspicious.
Right.
And, so that even he himself could be an Eid Echad, because we said in the case of the latter business, you know, to say that she was in seclusion, Eid Echad there. This is an exception to the general rule, as we learned, that Eid is normally means two witnesses. But this we learned was an exception. The Eid Envoy, they take it and say, you know, that one witness, but you don't have two witnesses, is necessary. Okay? So, there has to be a witness. But let's say that she was in seclusion with some guy At the end of Ek Velk, you know, on the other end, right. Oshkosh, wherever. And the witnesses are not there in order to testify. So in that case, according to Rakshashas, Einamayim Beit Kenesa, which doesn't mean that she's free, but even if she has the Mayim HaMa'orarim, it's not going to be proof of whether she was innocent or guilty.
It won't be clear, in other words.
It's not clear. We also learned another thing, and that is that there are times, and this is in accordance with an opinion given by Rebbe, but disputed slightly, but nevertheless, I'm bringing forth the argument so that we'll know, you see, what's going on. The other argument that we had is the fact that there are women who are guilty. They drink the Mayim HaMa'orarim, but you don't see anything happening to them at first. Only as time goes on, you say that she's misnademis. In other words, her health becomes poorer and poorer, and she begins, you know, to deteriorate in health until finally she's going to suffer, you know, the punishment that's written, that, you know, bitno noflo, bitno tsofto, yes, with the yerecha noflo. In other words, that, you know, her stomach becomes swollen and her thigh falls.
It doesn't happen instantaneously.
Right, it doesn't happen instantaneously. So why doesn't it happen instantaneously? This is the question. So the answer is because of the possibility that zechus chaylolo. What is zechus chaylolo? Because we say that she has merit, and because of her merit, this is why we don't see it happen immediately. The merit will enable her, you know, to have this process go through a period of time, you know, where her health will deteriorate and so on as a punishment. Guilty, yes, but because of good things that she does, so the punishment will not immediately happen. So this is the opinion of Rav Shesher. On the other hand, Rav Shimon has a country one. He's of the opinion that Mayim Beit Kenesa, that you cannot throw aspersions. So the other thing that we learned last week is, you know, what is the effect if you say that's Chus Toilah? You understand? Then what you're saying is that if the water itself is not any proof, then you're casting doubt upon whom? Upon the Tahoros. You're casting doubt upon those women who actually are innocent. They have not committed this, but you know, people will say that
well, she did it, but it's she's
yeah, you know, that the Mayim, you know, sort of something that didn't happen, but we know, you know, in our heart of hearts, you know, that she did this and this and so on, yeah. And that of course would be contrary to what the effect should be. So this is where we stand right now.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. So it says, Yamrit, but if you hold the opinion that ain't a my boyfriend, so, right, that the water is not a proof as to her chastity or, you know, her guilt, then in that case, Tegali Milsa Freya, then in that case, what will it prove? Will be will prove to begin with retroactively that the Chi Kadosh, that when this Korban Mincha that she brought was put into the holy vessel, right? So may you Korban Torah's Kodesh. Then, to begin with, the whole thing is a mistaken business, right? And if, therefore, it's not going to prove anything, then the Sipat L'Kulim, then in that case, let the thing be sold, redeemed for a Mincha, whatever it may be, and so on and so forth, because we would say that there's no validity to the mincha that she brings. There's no validity. And if it's in that case, sell it to Chul, right? So Amar Rav Yehuda, a discarta. So he came along and he says, he's a place discarta wherever he comes from. And he says, this is a very interesting interpretation. He says, I'm not talking about the fact that, you know, these witnesses that you're talking about, that they're Medinas Hayom, right? And finally they show up after the event, you know, after she's already joined at the Mayim HaMa'orarim, or after the, you know, the Mincha is already sanctified, that in that particular case, he says, I'm not, you know, there's a different possibility. What's the possibility? maybe Takahashi was innocent to begin with.
But she had it.
But now that she's in the base of it, she's with the Betzim, or she's going to Yerushalayim or something, maybe something new has happened.
In the temple.
Right. As we'll see
in
right
the temple
now
priest.
What he says. He says, Shazinso Zora. Maybe she committed adultery, he says, when she was in the temple courtyard. To me, it's a little hard to imagine, I mean, that the temple courtyard, she's going to commit adultery, but...
the witness can't you testify
sometimes, concerning. You know, theory is very important, you know. You argue from the point of view of theory, even if, you would imagine that such a thing would never happen.
They don't miss anything.
Right.
We don't know if it's day or night.
So he says, in that particular case, then what happens? Okay? Yes. So the Chi Kodosh, the Yikara Shabbi Kodosh. In other words, when she had brought the Korban, the Mincha to the Beis HaMikdash, it was perfectly valid at that time, right? So in other words, then what happened? Is it a valid mincha or is it not a valid mincha? At the time that she bought it was valid. But subsequently, what did she do? She went and she committed adultery in the temple courtyard. So, Master Flo Rabbi Sharsha. So Rabbi Sharsha attacks this point of view. He says, "Valo pirchei kehuna melaven oisam." He says, look, we have a statement that says that once she gets to the courtyard at the Beis HaMikdash, then the young Kahanim, they have to escort her in order to make sure, that she's led to the right place, where it has to take place.
And
okay.
She seduced one of those guys.
So, this is what this is what he says over here.
As far as age.
These are the young Kahanim, the first sprouting beards
and so on. Novices.
Right.
The apprentices.
Yeah.
It's the same usage as Pirchei Aguda.
Of course they got it.
Same usage, right.
But here, of course,
typically
it
doesn't refer to children. It refers to young adults.
Exactly, right. I do want to say, in other places, like for example in Gemara Sukkah, there, Pirchei Kahuna, it's a mark of honor. Why? Because these are the young men, for example, when they came to the Simchas Beis HaSheva, for example, and they had these tremendous menorahs that were, I don't know how many feet high, that, when they lit them all, the whole Yerushalayim would be lit up, and so on and so forth. You had to have young guys who had the strength to climb up on the ladders in order to go and to light these things. So, they had a very useful function. But in addition, of course, they were learning the ropes of how to be Kahanim. This is what they did.
This must be.
Yeah. They were doing a stage. These were the Pirchei Kahuna. Right. So, it comes with the idea that maybe the Pirchei Kahuna, she sinned together with the Pirchei Kahuna. Well, Rav Ashi has a different explanation. Rav Ashi Omar, Kigon Shanitzvah called in the Kavera. He says, maybe she had to go to the bathroom, okay? And what happened? So maybe, in other words, he's implying that when she went to the bathroom, she was able to pull off a stunt like this. like some of the movies that you see, the bathroom. The man and the woman go in and they lock the door in order to be able to fornicate, right? So he says, maybe that's when she committed adultery over there. Because, he says, they're not happy with that explanation, okay? Because it says, the ato pirchei kahuna v'chipoa talilo. So this either you can take as a statement, or more likely it's a question. If you take it as a statement, the question is, what does the word kippah mean?
Okay.
All right, we're familiar with the word kippah as a hat, and this could very easily be the explanation. In that case, then, this would be like the question. The question asks, tell me, are these pirchei kahuna hanging on to her cap, you know. So that's she came into the Beis HaMikdash, you know, with her head covered, right? So are they hanging on to her or something? After all, if she goes to the bathroom, are they going to tag along just to see or something like that? They wouldn't do it, you see. So that's one possibility. I've come across another possibility for the word kippah. This is based upon the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that when a person was being held for trial temporarily or for some other reason, they had also what they called a kippah. What was a kippah? Kippah was like a holding cell where they could hold him over there, or even they could condemn a person afterwards, or even an animal, you know, which let's say was guilty of some offense or something like that. They could put it into this and then not feed it any water or food or anything like that. So in that case, maybe the keeper was someplace, you know, that they came and they said, you know, they didn't tag her along, you know, when she was in the keeper. Maybe the keeper had a base like kissing or something over there. I don't know whether this is really the explanation. I like the first explanation better. Namely, are they tagging along with her so closely, you know, that, you know, they could observe every moment whatever she was doing. Okay. Rav Papa Amar, it says, the Yoylam Kedamrin on Miyakar, says, look, we have to say that really it's the way we interpreted, you know, right at the beginning. So the question is, if indeed, you know, witnesses came along and so on afterwards, so the Ka'amrit, typical woman, you say, you know, that the mincha that she brought should be considered chulin. Why should it be considered chulin? When she comes, I mean, maybe it should be considered legitimate, but why do you say that it should become chulin? It says, but the Rabbanon says, this was something that the rabbis made a gezerah. They made a decree. Why? Why did they decree that she, you know, that should be chulin and not be considered kodesh? Because he says, Shema Yomru Matsim Kli Shores Lechol. That's in order to prevent people saying that once something has been sanctified, that automatically take it and you make it into chulin, which of course would be, you know, it would be like casting doubt upon anything that has been sanctified by saying that you can take it and make it chulin. In other words, it would challenge the validity of what was going on in the service of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Well, maybe we should take a look at the Rashi up to this point. Needless to say, there's a lot of Rashi over here. All right. All right, so we'll start at the top of the page with the Rashi. It says, Vaymeris Tameyani, right? The woman says that, you know, I am unclean. In other words, she heard so, she says, that she confessed where?
The Bezdin.
She confessed to the Bezdin. She didn't say to her husband. Well, the previous at the Mishnah, if you remember, before started by saying to me, I need a chot, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, obviously she said to her husband that. But here it's already she's before the Bezdin in this particular device that she confesses. Okay? And she says in the presence of the Bezdin, I'll kill Kula. In other words, that she had committed adultery. Shehoyim ayim nolecho, because they would give her, as we translated last week, and we did this Rashi, ma'ayin means normally that, you know, they sort of like threaten her. In other words, they give her such a charge in order to try to induce her to see, you know, whether she will confess to her misdeed. What the charge was, we'll see a little bit later on. And yes, I should have thought tonight and next week, okay? If you'll take a look on the following page, on Zion on the Dalit, the second Mishnah on the page, okay?
Yeah.
See it?
Yeah.
This is when the Shay actually came before the great Sanhedrin of Yerushalayim. So then over there it says, Mayim na lero kiderosh, Mayim na edin aposhes. That they would give her the same type of very severe warnings in order to try to get her, you know, to confess and do tshuva and so on and so forth, as they would in the case of Eidin Nefoshes. Gemara and Sanhedrin stresses how they would get the witnesses in capital cases and say to them, you know, not just ask questions, you know, did you see this, did you see that, and so on and so forth, but they would continue and say, you know, that you may be guilty of shedding innocent blood and things like that, and, you know, Hakaim Nefesh Achas B'Yisrael, the famous statement, you know. But likewise, if it's Hakaim Nefesh Achas B'Yisrael, the opposite, of course, would be Hamavi Nefesh Achas. I mean, if you destroy a soul, it says, Kiyo Yibeda Yachodah. So, you know, they would give them all kinds of things in order to try to impress upon them the importance of telling the truth. And, you know, to realize with all seriousness, you know, what the action is and so on. So they wanted to give her the opportunity to confess in case she didn't. So we'll come to that later. But, you know, first they start in by saying, if you take a look over there, I'm running ahead a little bit, but it says, you know, that the Omer, you know, in other words, the head of the Beis Din who was addressing her, says, Biti, my daughter, he says, right? Habayayin, Oysa, in other words, wine maybe is the cause. In other words, the reason why you did it is because you were intoxicated, baby, right? You understand? Habayishoyka, so in other words, you fool around a lot or something, you know, you look for entertainment and so on and so forth, and you forget, you know, what you should be doing. Habayaldus, so maybe it's because of immaturity. You're still, you know, thinking with the mentality of a child instead of an adult, right? Or Harvey Shechinim Aroyim Osin, right? Many things that evil neighbors, you know, that you have bad neighbors and they get you into evil ways because you want to be like them, you know, peer pressure, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
If everybody else is committing adultery, so you feel why should be left out of the picture,
yeah.
You know? So, you know, to get it to confess. And they concludes by saying, I see the Shvei HaGodol Shenichtav Bikdusha Shelo Yebochem Alamayim, right? And do it for the sake of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, for his great namesake, you know, because it was written, which was written in Kedusha, don't forget, I mean, how did they write it? They wrote the Shema HaMeforash, you know, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, they wrote in the lettering, you know, in the Megillah that they write. And they don't want it erased by the water, by the Mayim HaMeforash. So, you know, she should consider all these things and repent in case she really had committed adultery.
Right.
So that's the Ma'ayim, all right? Mekamei de Tikdosh, as Rashi explains, and as Kli Shoris, as I explained to you, in other words, that when you put it into a Kli Shoris, in other words, one of the sanctified vessels, at the base of Mikdosh, so that makes what is inside, in other words, the offering, that makes that also sanctified. Okay? Typical Chulin, it says, Befidyon. In other words, let it be redeemed. Shelo hayo kedushas haguf, ele kedushas peh. Because, in other words, if it happened before it actually went into the Kli Shoris, then in that case, it can become Chulin. And be redeemed, as we said before, you sell it, the money is used in order to buy a new Korban Mincha, right? And the only Kedusha so far that has been violated, as long as it hasn't been put into Kli Shoris, is simply Kedushas Peh, which, as I explained to you before, if you say, I want to give a Korban Mincha, right? Or I want this flour to be used for a Korban Mincha. So that's the only thing that has been violated. You know, that sanctity is not on the same level with, you know, the Kedushas Kli Shoris. Understand? The Chol HaMenoches, and in general, all the types of Korban Mincha can be redeemed, called Zman Shaloi Kotshu B'Kli, as long as they have not been sanctified by being put into a Kli Shoris. But if we say that, you know, these witnesses came when? Elo the Vosa de Kodesh, after the Korban Mincha had already been made sanctified, right? The Kli Shoris Mekachin is Horoi Lahem, because by putting it into the Kli Shoris, this sanctifies what is put into them. Shelola Tseis Uda Chulin, so that they can no longer become Chulin, they can no longer be redeemed for Chulin. Kidit Nan, as we learned, the Pasuk says, Kol HaNageya Behem Yikdosh, right, that anyone who touches them becomes sanctified. Velikorev eina ruyo, but it's not worthy, right, to be sacrificed. Sharei eino bo elo haskir abeinu shazu shetim bodek, because this comes only to remind her that she is, you know, that she may be guilty of a sin, and you know, so that this is the reason why she's going to be tested, right? Arei hi beduka biomedes, right? And she, and it, arei hi beduka. Here, I don't think it means she, but rather it means only that the mincha itself has been examined, right? And well, all right, let's take it in the case the way we said it before. All right, Harei Beduko the Amedes. In other words, the woman actually has already been tested. That's right, it came after, as we said, the Bosa, right? It came after she had already drunk the Mayim on the Orer, right? Onadova Name Lechatio Tahakriva, right? And we cannot simply take this and sacrifice it as, let's say, a Nadova. What do we mean by Nadova? Nadova means that if it's not, right, so it's a free will offering, that's all. I want to give a korban mincha for no particular reason, but simply that I want to give a korban mincha. So in that particular case, right, so he says, no, we can't accept it for that person, right? The mincha se'orim eino kesheira elo nesoyto le'omer. Because he says, a mincha which is made up of bali is only valid for a sota or for the omer. The omer, you know that, you know, when we start in the first night of Pesach, on the second night of Pesach to be exact, right, they have to bring the, right, they go out to the field and cut down the, you know, the barley over there and then bring it, and then the following day, on the start second the day, right. So this would be, you know, they would grind it up and they would bring a mincha of pulp. So those are the only two cases. Otherwise, what did we say? What must a mincha always be made of? Must always be made of solids. Has to be made of fine flour. Otherwise, it's not valid. Okay?
Must be made of what?
Fine flour.
Fine flour.
Right.
Right. When I say fine flour, right, I'm correct. It's wheat flour, but it also has to be sifted time and again.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be sifted again and again to make sure that there are no imperfections, whatever, within the flour itself. Well, the Mishnah, Menachas describes how they had various types of sieves that they would put it in, and then put it into another process and so on to make sure that by the time that they got through, you had only the very fine flour. So, E Amrit Bishlimor. That my Baikin I saw, if you hold to the opinion that the test is always a valid test of the Mayim Lama Orabin, then in that case, in Shosasaw, right, if she drank it, Achele Bo Aden, before witnesses showed up on the scene, so Alma, we see, Bishor Shenitla Bechli, the time when the Korban Mincha was put into the sacred vessel, Re'uya Hayasonikli Shoris. It was worthy, it deserved, it should have been put into it. I mean, in other words, it should attain, you know, a sanctified status, right? The Ahi Shato, because at that very time, it was Bas Mikdash or Mikrafi. It was, you know, worthy of being sanctified and of being sacrificed. Misopik, because of doubt. Kishar Mincha Saita, like any other mincha that a sota would bring. I mean, why is she bringing this? Because we don't know definitely did she or didn't she, right? So, why should this be any difference? So, Hilka, if that's the case, ki kaddish b'kli, then shaper kaddish. In that case, if it was sanctified in the kli, then in that case it was correct to do so. U'misham v'ochi, and for this reason, ki also Adim, when Adim came, right, then in that case, ipsilah, in other words, this mincha now is no good anymore for the future. It cannot be redeemed for cholin. As we said, you know, it becomes cholin and you use the money to buy other flour. But What do you do with it? So we learn from this reference. This is why, you know, that Baraisa says, you know, the Elo Shemin Chesed Nisrafes. That these are cases, you know, where the mincha, even though brought, you know, in a kli shoreis and everything else, but still, you have to take it and you have to put it into the base hadeshin over there, become shevach hadeshin, you know, it has to be burnt over there. Eli yamit in hamayim bat kineso. But if you hold the opinion, as we said before, you know, what Rav Sheisha says, that for whatever reason it may be, you know, it's not an absolute proof as to whether she committed adultery or whether she's innocent. So oil below the barak a meris. So inasmuch, you know, it doesn't mean anything if she would be tested, right? So below ruuya he the mincha. In that case, it cannot be considered worthwhile as a mincha. So it says to go of milsulam afreya, then it will be proved sort of retroactively, which is how we usually understand the word lamafreya, the loha yisore uya lichli, that it was not, you know, it should not have been put into the klishores because it had no meaning. The yang klishores bekadshin ela hara uilohem, and the klishores, I mean, just putting it into the vessel doesn't mean anything. It means something only when it really is correct unto to do so. It has, you know, it's valid.
Are you happy with that?
Am I happy with it? I don't have to be happy for
no,
it.
No, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, if,
the real problem, because
right,
if the
real problem,
the real
is,
problem is that the prescription of the prescription
right.
of the verse was carried out in detail,
right.
And because you have this theological dilemma
exactly.
about how accurate the Mayim Aram is,
right.
you're going to say that now that Adam come afterwards, you're going to make it Lamafreya.
Right.
I can't get past that.
Right. And if you adopt that, then you say it's, the whole thing is meaningless.
That's right. Take it a step further and say the whole thing is bogus. You should never bring a mincha.
Right.
Should never have a mincha.
Right, exactly.
So this side
that's
is very,
difficulty.
It's a very illogical.
Right. That's the difficulty in Rav Sheisha's opinion. Exactly, I agree with you.
And so this whole Shaka B'Tari here is just clarifying that almost oxymoronic aspect to Rav Sheisha's.
Right,
right.
Let me ask
you
something.
If
yes.
a case is assuming the moment that by the time she gets cheese, put in your soul, and she's fed the water.
Right.
Isn't the principal issue of the case already settled? And the water is just the final act. At that point, can the Adam come after a case is settled or stopped?
Well, we had on the previous page a question, you know, maybe the chakra, you know, there are a bunch of liars or something like that, right? Or the question will be raised, maybe the Adam's owning it.
Yeah.
Understand?
You can't feed the Adam the water.
Right.
How can it be solved?
Right. But you know, each one argues his point of view, as I said.
Let me ask you
right.
a question.
Yeah.
If a person of God pronounces somebody guilty based on Adam,
right.
and the case is settled, but the person hasn't been executed,
correct.
Can Adam come and reopen the case?
That's the classic case of Adam's own.
Yeah, that's a.
It's almost
the Adam Zimmerman is a possibility. Okay? That is a possibility. But that was the case in some heaven where even they proved that the Adam were liars, but nevertheless the execution was carried out.
Well, actually, they carried out very fast, they don't think.
However, right. That's a, but nevertheless, when you read the Gemara in some heaven, you see that between the time that the verdict was passed and the time that execution, they had runners over there to signal because maybe the court would have a change of mind. Maybe somebody who had voted for guilt decided that he was wrong in his opinion and would vote for innocence, and in that case they would reverse the opinion and so on. It was possible.
In other words,
right.
Okay.
It was possible. Right. So you have, you know,
the time element was
right. The time element is very short. There's no question. Because, you know, they didn't want to be, as we would say, Ma'ane es Hadin. As it was, I mean, whenever it was a capital case, it was never decided in one day. In one day, they could definitely free the person, but if he wanted to argue for, you know, that he's chayav nisa, And in that case, you have to let it stay over until the following day, and they have to reread the minutes of the case. They had, secretaries, Sofrim over there would carry, they would jot down the proceedings, the arguments, and so on and so forth, and that they would review the record again, and then take a final vote, on the second day, in order not to rush, in order to give the judges a chance to think through and not come to a hasty decision about it. Because after all, the life of a person was involved.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So it says, another one. But if you follow the opinion, you know that Anna Mayim Breitkin, right? If you follow that opinion, then not only do we cast doubt upon the mincha itself, but we say the sipek lechulin, so let it become chulin, v'lo pidyon, but not for redemption. Why? Shekedushas peshalo, kedushas shli shalo, hakol betos. The sanctification to begin by the person, in other words, let's say the woman saying, "I'm bringing a mincha sukkah," right? Or the fact that the king puts it into a kli. All this was done mistakenly anyway.
Trying to figure out the difference between the two.
I think
right.
A sanctification of the name, the concept, and consecration I tend to think of in terms of consecrating an object,
right,
or perhaps an individual. I have trouble with it.
An individual could be consecrated as a kohen or something like that.
Sanctification
is
for
shame. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. The Linkin used the word consecration.
Right.
Right. It's getting pretty bad.
And yet we do use the expression sanctified food.
Right, I don't know that there is a difference.
All right, well,
it was good to take
this is an argument. I'll quickly show you it.
There you go.
Okay.
So simple, right? So it says balei pidyon, right? Shekedushas peshalo, ukedushas kli shalo, right? Whether the sanctity, the fact that she consecrated, or the fact that it was put into the kli and was then consecrated it. I call the toys, right? This was all a mistake. Shoyinus burim, sheitu the mincha. We were of the opinion that, she has to bring a mincha because we thought, that the Maimamorim means something. But if we were of the opinion that the Maimamorim doesn't approve anything, so the Eino came. And it's not so. The Hekdesh toes, Eino Hekdesh. And consecration, or sanctification, whatever, done mistakenly, if it's all based on error, so it's not holy. So then, if you remember, then we came up with a new opinion, right? Rabbi Huda the Discard, right? Where he says, Shazin Sabazora, right? He says, the Achar, Shekocha Bichli, right? Everything was going along fine. The mincha was consecrated in the vessel, right? The alznus zeh bohuedim. The lo alatubo shalstira. So now, witnesses are coming not to testify about the original case.
where
they said that she was secluded with the guy and so on and so forth, right? The lo alatubo shalstira zeh, but rather, what are they coming to testify? They're coming to testify now that zinso ba zora. That she committed adultery in the temple courtyard. So, Hilkach, that's the case, says, Kikotcha Bichli, if it became sanctified or consecrated, okay, in the Kli, so Bas Mikdash Mikra, it was correct. It definitely should have been sanctified and it should have been sacrificed. Why? Lo Havalaidim, because there were no witnesses concerning the first case. So it was perfectly correct. So it's a valid,
without witnesses in the first case, how can she be brought to the mikvah in the first place?
Well, you're asking a very good question. There is one possibility. The husband could claim that he saw.
Oh.
Yeah, that is a possibility, right.
reason because in that case, you know, we learned several pages back that it could make sense. They didn't like the idea because they said maybe he's a jealous husband and he's only making it up. But from the point of view of Din, he has the right to do it.
Isn't
that right? To challenge her.
Isn't it questionable?
Yeah.
Suspicious.
Right.
If all of a sudden, in the best of which she deserves to aid him come, she committed the act right here, maybe the husband, if they had a weak case, decided, let's put the couple of aid him quickly.
Yeah.
Well, that would be.
Well, but I mean, you have false witnesses
here. I mean,
this is such a.
This is already more like a theoretical argument than anything else, right? No question about that. I mean, I can't imagine that something like this would actually ever happen. But
what was the punishment of the Parfait?
Parfait Kahuna?
Yeah. I mean, because that's well,
they committed adultery
with a married woman.
They were warned and everything else and so on and so forth, you know. So,
theoretically,
so
it was a kind of a spontaneous thing.
That's what I'm saying. This wasn't a very easy thing that you're talking about.
It's only theory. That's
yeah.
not all I can say.
Yeah.
But as you can see, but they try to look at it from all kinds of angles in order to see. Maybe it happened this way. What if it happened this way? Something like that. Would it still be considered, you know, a valid corpus?
What? She was raped against her will.
No.
Well,
that case, I mean, that no question. I mean, the only problem with the rape is that if she were married to a coin, then she would lose the right to eat food. Mm-hmm. Okay.
If
she's
right.
raped, it's onus.
Yeah.
I mean,
if
right.
she
can't
was raped
against her will, under
in
compulsion.
Isn't that the same as a city? I mean,
yeah.
The soil is a different story.
Right,
but
right.
city,
so if she cried out in that particular case, then the longer the is, that you know, the rape,
hey,
you know.
This novice here, Cohen, is raping me.
Yeah. But of course, I mean, you know that not every time is the onus put to death. I mean, because there are also the case that the Oedis can buy his way out by marriage and
that's
giving, you know, a knot to the father.
Not
as
well.
She's
already married.
Right. Okay, so then we say, Shaditra called in the Kodesh, right? In other words, she had to use the bathroom. So, the whole Kodesh Zinzva. So, they left her, right? And she went, and then she committed adultery. So what happened? The atu pirchei kohuna v'kipa shaloshet loyim lo. Say, are they really so closely hanging on to a very hair covering? Shelo tishamet biadom, you know, that she should not be able to escape from their hands. So then along came, let's see, who was it again? And so then along came Rav Papa, right, and he says, so what did we say first of all? Says, he says, all these theories, you know, that you know, she committed adultery with the Pirchei Kahuna, or it was in the Azorah and things like that, he says, that doesn't make any sense to me. Okay. We have to assume that the first case is the correct case,
yeah.
Namely, that, you know, she had been warned and she then secluded herself to begin with, you know, with the person who she was accused of, right? But Apilu Hochi, and nevertheless, says, even in this case, the Kashan Rav Sheshes. This is not a Kashan Rav Sheshes. Why isn't a Kashan Rav Sheshes? The Ho, the Kohoma. Because when he says the Kevin de Lechasil the Kiddush, you know, that since it never could have been sanctified in the first place, typical Chulin, right, then it should be considered Chulin. So it's in Hokinami with Oraisa, Yotis the Chulin. So even from the Torah point of view, it should become Chulin. Umid the Rabbonin, and then along came the Rabbonin, what did they say? The Rabbonin, he is Revis. The Rabbonin say, that you know, according to the law of the Torah, if it had no validity, it was only cholin, right? But the Rabbanan made a gezerah that it's not simply cholin, but it should be burnt. The thing shein are called the key in the hilchos b'halachas, because not everybody is well versed in what the laws are. Leida to know
shebishvil shehoyu lo eidim, that because she had witnesses, lo hayisa ruvia the kaddish. It was not, you know, then the mincha was not really valid, you know, that it should be made, should be considered holy. The also the neighbor, and people who don't know what's going on, and they see that something that was already put into the kli shoreis, right, and sanctified over there, so mutzin dobor she kidosh b'chli shoreis lechulin. So that's why the rabbi said, okay, let's make it chulin and let's burn it. Okay.
Now, I would have thought, actually, when I saw the words in the Gemara, Lolam Kedamin Rikara, that it's Elam, that it goes back to Makmi the Kiddush type of Kahul.
That goes back to what?
It goes back to the very first supposition.
Yeah.
That it's before it was placed in the sacred vessel.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that was the first statement type of Kahul.
Yeah.
And he's coming to say, but it's a major difference. Rashi comes and tells you
very
precisely that that's
Rashi
not the case. Is
that
Rashi's major intention
right.
with his very crystal clear explanation of which particular...
Right.
Because the very beginning, Meikara,
would
go back to the beginning of the discussion of Makmi the Mikami the Tiktish, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So he's saying that Rashi is saying take the mincha out of the clay kodesh and sell it for chulin.
No, he's saying that it never was or could be a kadosh in this situation, because they want to put a siyag at the Torah. They want to prevent a possibility of any mistake. So the normal course would be that it would be considered, if she brought it in good faith and whatever, it would be considered kadosh, but then
when
the witnesses come, whatever, it would change to holin, and then it would... then there's a dispute, otherwise it's regular chulin, or whether you can just, it has to be burnt, or there can be salt, whatever. But here they say,
Rashi's
no, we're not even going
to
get into this.
According to the law of the Torah,
Rashi
it's
says
only chulin because of
Rashi said,
it never can be kadosh. Rashi says it never can be kadosh. The Rabbanim said it only can be considered chulin, and more than that, it has to be burned.
Right.
Just to prevent
anybody
from making
a mistake.
And thinking it could any point in the process being kadosh.
Okay,
which is very different.
Right.
It's a very different interpretation.
Correct.
Very interesting.
But it sounds more logical
that way. Okay, so now we get back to the Gemara.
Masir Rav Mori.
So Rav Mori comes with another objection. It says, Nit meis minchoso achle kocho bichli. Right? If the mincha became literally, tummy, okay? In other words, something happened to it that it would not be re'uyo, it wouldn't be valid, to become sanctified. And this happened, before actually it had become sanctified in the vessel. So haray he can call him nochis. Then it's like any other mincha, the tibbona, and can be redeemed, as we said. In other words, it's Yosef Chulin, right? But, the money used, the sale of it, so that can be used to buy a new mincha. But, Mishakotcha Bechli, once it became sanctified or consecrated in the Kli Shoreis, Sarei, Kecholam Nochis, then it's like all other Menochis, that if it becomes Tomei, then in that case, it's a Sorei. It has to be burnt.
This is what you put the tradition.
Yeah. So this is the first one. Then he continues and he says, Kodash HaKomets, let's say that it was brought in the Kli. Then what happened? The Kain came along and he took the Komets out of it. As I said, it takes a couple of, like, two fingers or so, and whatever adheres to his fingers, this is what the Komets is, okay? And that has to be burnt on the Mizbeah. So he says, let's say he had already performed the act of kemitza, putting his fingers in there in order to withdraw it, but below his pikla hakriva, but he did not have an opportunity yet to burn it on the mizbeach. And what happened? Ad shemeis hu, ad shemeis ahi, And even before, you know, he had the Safid to go and bring it to the Mizbeach. Either the husband died or the wife died. Then it follows the rule of all other menochas, namely, the Sisorik has to be burnt. Was sanctified, right? But it's no longer valid to perform an act of atonement, you understand? So in that particular case, then it's to be burnt. Alright, let's take the next step. Korav HaKomets. Let's say now that the flour that had been taken out of the mincha, right, had been burnt by the Kohen on the Mizbeah, but for lo yispik le'chol shirayim, but the Kohen did not have time to eat the rest or the rest of the flour that remained over there, achameisu or achameisahi, before suddenly he died or she died. So harei he could call him nochis. Then it follows the rule for all menochis, namely, the seyochel, that the it should be eaten by the kohanim. The shiram should be eaten. Why? Shall not sofek boz mitkila. So, because to begin with, it was doubtful whether it was necessary in the case of the woman, you know, the sota. We don't know, was she innocent, was she guilty? So we brought a mincha without knowing definitely whether it was one way or the other. So kipros feiko, and what was the purpose of this? It was in order to atone for this doubtfulness that we have, the whole chala, right? And she, and that's it. And that's the end of the process over there. But what happens? Bo'ala Eidim Shehit Meyo. What if then witnesses show up who say that she had committed adultery? And in that case, Minchos on Nisrakas. And in that case, what happens to this Mincha? You have to burn whatever is left over there. Nimsu Eideho Zememin. Now, what happens if we find out that these witnesses were really Eidim Zememin? Liars, right? So in that case, what happens? So, in that particular case, first of all, how does it affect the mincha? So we say, in that particular case, you cannot re-sanctify it. You understand? In other words, once witnesses came along, even though they were telling an untruth, but the result was that we said that this mincha now has lost its validity as being kodesh, right? So we cannot re-consecrate it, so to speak. So mincha is chulin, right? It becomes chulin. Of course, the question is, what happens if we find out that there is Edomim? So remember, this we learned from the beginning of Marcus, that if they are Edomim, but you cannot do to them what they intended to do to her, then in that case, what do they get? They get Marcus.
They can't feed them.
That's their punishment.
Well, except they should get into a bit of taste.
So he says, Edomim, comrade. You're talking about Adam Zimmerman. Why should we assume, you know, about Adam Zimmerman? He says, Adam Zimmerman, Kola is the point is actually with Adam Zimmerman comment, it's really about you question the validity of the, you know, the sacrifice. Well, people say, you know, that actually you were what? You were taking out from a sacred vessel and making it holy. This is what they're arguing about, right? So you think that people are going to start in to make mistakes about it because they won't be mistaken. They know that something happened in this particular case. Why? Because we say, Eidim Zoymimin, Kola Istahu. Kola Istahu means that people talk about these things. In other words, it's a big event. And people start in, oh, you know, Shmeril and the Beryl, you know, or Eidim Zoymimin. People talk about them. So people will know that, you know, if this was declared Chulin, then there's a reason for it, because these are a bunch of
right?
Tanya Kabose, the Rav Sheshes. Now, the Gemara continues, and it says, we learn another supporting view for the basic opinion of Rav Sheshes. What does he say? That ain't a mayim breaking I saw, right? But why did we say it? Why did Rav Sheshes? So, you know, we had different opinions, right? Like, for example, we said Zchus Toilah, right? In other words, you know, the woman has merit, that's why we don't see it. Or the Aden are at the other end of the world, but, you know, but they are there. In other words, that's why the Demayim is not going to test her, because she is guilty. But just we don't have witnesses in order to prove a guilt.
The guilt will come out as a form of a pregnancy. That's the whole point.
Well, on the contrary, if she became pregnant, that's a sign that she's innocent. Because it's written, you know, that if she goes through the ordeal, the mind have aura,
nothing
happens to her, then right. So it's written over there, v'nikso, which means she is proved innocent, v'nizra zora. And she will have, you know, seed from her husband, she will have a child. So that's proof that she was innocent to begin with.
Well,
okay.
If she committed adultery, and let's say, and there was no way to, it was just a jealous husband, okay?
Right.
And she really did commit adultery with somebody, okay?
Yeah.
And she takes the mind on him. Well, and nothing happens. So he goes back to live with his wife again, even though she may have.
Oh yeah, that's the idea, right? Exactly.
But she may already be pregnant. She may have already been pregnant.
What happens with the Adam then, if nothing happens?
She may be off.
No, nothing happens to the Adam.
But are the Adams then considered someone?
No. No. They're not automatically considered as someone.
Okay.
It's only where we know that they were liars. But they may have been mistaken. I mean, they saw.
Actually, the book is only.
They saw
her
in seclusion. They claim they saw her in seclusion, okay? But the Maya Mamorim proves the fact that she was innocent. Right, okay? So they were mistaken. But the Zimmerman would imply already that they came deliberately in order to give false testimony.
Another set of aims that makes them someone.
Right.
In other words,
right, yes, somebody to show that they were in a different place at the time that they testified.
He lives with his wife. She goes back to a relationship with her husband.
Right.
Okay, and she gives birth in 7 months. What does that mean?
That
means that she's not innocent anymore.
Sounds legitimate.
It's after 7 months?
She's
Three or four months. Obviously, she would be showing already.
Yeah.
She should have been settled a long time ago, but once again, I'm now coming to the turn to perhaps false distinction between Adi Tuma and Adi Stira.
Yeah.
In very close proximity here, we mentioned that when Adi Tuma comes, she doesn't take the Mayamarim. If Adi Tuma comes, then it goes out lechulin. And on the other hand, if the Ede Stira becomes Omi, you see, we're talking about,
right.
We seem to be talking about two distinct entities, Ede Tuma and Ede Stira.
Except that
in very
one
close
opinion, it's the same.
Yeah.
But in this discussion, it's clearly different. Ede Tuma would mean that she doesn't drink the Mayim Arim, that it's typical lechulin.
Yeah.
And Ede Stira, on the other hand, because you said the ones that is Omim are the Ede Stira.
I would think that they actually come to say that she was the mayor, that they saw her, you know, something like that.
Because you said if you had a stira, she does drink the mayim arim.
Right.
Bo adim, she doesn't drink, and it's typical chulin if it's bo ade tuma.
Correct.
So ade tuma and not the same as ade stira.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, that they make a decision. But
I can't get past it.
Another place, Gemara says it's the same thing. Tuma and stira the same thing.
Wait, the witnesses come and they testify.
Yeah.
Then if she admits after they testify she doesn't drink, but if
yeah,
she
correct.
Doesn't admit, then she does drink.
Yeah, absolutely right.
The Adim do not conclusively prove the case.
Pardon me?
I said the Adim do not conclusively prove the case. She still has to go through the ceremony unless she admits.
We say, the problem is, which opinion do you follow? Do you follow the opinion of Rav Sheshes, who says that the Ein Hamayim Virgin, namely that who cares, she drinks the water, but it's never a proof? Or are you going to follow the opinion of Rav Shimon, who disputes that, who says that there is no such monkey business, that it's always a test as to her innocence or guilt? Understand?
Well, I don't remember now, but isn't with Rav Sheshes, it isn't an immediate proof, but there's a long-term proof. Is that correct?
According to him, Ein Hamayim Bodkin. It's not anything right.
Doesn't prove
but
anything.
But our objection to that is that your Maisi laws, right?
Right.
That you're casting dispersions on Zahoros, on all the women who are innocent and simply being accused by jealous husbands, and you're saying that it proves nothing, you understand?
Yeah.
And that's the problem over there. At any rate, coming back over here, Tanya Kavosinga of Sheshes, right?
Yes.
Have another teaching that we had, you know, which is in accordance with the opinions of Rav Sheshes, again, that Ein HaMayim Beitkim, right? The Lav Metame, but not according to the reasons that he gave before. Why is not according to the reasons he gave before? So the answer is that before he was giving like logical reasons, okay? Basis of his logic, etc. Here, they take a pasuk and they dissect it. Pasuk says, right, Utaho Rahi, all right? She is innocent, right? She is pure. In other words, she is innocent, okay? So he says each word over here needs clarification. Tahora, innocent. Below, she is not Adam and Minasayon. It means that there are no witnesses someplace far off who know that she definitely has committed an act of guilt. Utahora, why does the Pasuk, however, say Utahora with Habab? So the answer is that's to teach you something else. Below, she told Salos Chus. Okay, it said the Pasuk, it says Utahora he. So that he already belongs to the next one. Alright, below she told Salos Chus. In other words, we say, you know, that Utahora means the implication is that the reason why the Mayim HaMorim isn't working is because she has merit, which causes it not to become effective immediately. Okay? As we explained earlier. See,
yeah.
Right? He, why does it say she? Below, she yisu yitnu bo mozvos bilabonim. Meaning that she is innocent, but she is not the kind of a person about whom women are going to gossip. Because women are going to gossip, it means that she already has not a good name in the community to begin. Yisuv Yitnu Bo means that they will have discussions concerning her. Masa Matan, right? And who are the Mozros Balavona? So Rashi and others explain that Mozros means that the women would get together by the light of the moon, I guess probably, you know, at a time when, you know, it was early sunset, it was still too early to go to bed. After they fed their husbands, gave them dinner, so they would get together and they'd have a little coffee clutch, okay? And what would they do? They would be weaving together. They'd be spinning, weaving, and so on, okay? So, naturally, at the time when they're there, you know.
Lashon Hara.
Right.
Time for Lashon Hara.
Okay.
Yes, but look at it this way. Yeah. This, if they're doing that, they can't be a zero.
Rabbi Shimon, now how about Rabbi Shimon, who we said doesn't accept Rav Sheshes' opinion? Well, first of all, he says that he, the Bov, the Dorish. He says, first of all, he doesn't make a drush on the Bov. Okay?
He doesn't make any drush on it.
Okay. According to Tosfos, there may be other places where he does make, but in this particular case, he doesn't accept it. Okay? And secondly, says, V'ho Iko, Yesh lo Eidim Medina Sayon, you give me an argument that, you know, maybe the water wouldn't be effective because of the fact, you know, that there are witnesses someplace far off. Oh, I don't accept that either. You know why? Lo Shchicha. This is not a common occurrence. Normally, where are witnesses? They're around locally. They're not someplace off.
Yeah,
so that in that case, as we said before, on the other side of Vav Amud Aleph over there, we said that his opinion is that he doesn't believe that Sechus Taylor, he doesn't accept that, and he doesn't accept the fact that Ein HaMayim Bokinosor. His opinion is Bokinosor, it's a perfectly valid test, and he won't look for any other contradictions to this. And why? Because he doesn't want, as we said before, to be Moitzi Laz al Tahat Hertz. He doesn't want to be Moitzi Laz on women who are innocent, and to say that this is never a test.
It doesn't matter.
It's never going to prove it. Okay. 1 o'clock, I think we'll stop at
this point. Yeah, all right. So we're on
this week, and they'll touch on.
But now we're on Amit
Zion's
Zion. Zion.
So does the halacha go with Rav Shimon since he had the last word?
No, I would like to say that it goes with Rav Shimon.
Yeah, I think it's more logical also. Sure, no.
Okay, so
I'm still not sure based on the arguments over here whether we're going to come out.
So February 19th, 1997.
Okay. In answer to the question again that we heard, does the halacha follow Rav Shimon or does it follow Rav Sheshes? In other words, do we say that the Mayim Botkin also according to Rav Shimon that it's a perfectly valid test and the results are going to prove either whether she's innocent or guilty? Or do we follow Rav Sheshes who said Ein HaMayim Botkin Himself because of the fact that maybe it's post Taila or for any other reason, in other words, that there'll be a delayed reaction, but eventually she will be because she really is guilty or not. There is no clear-cut decision on that, I have to tell you that. I researched it again prior to tonight's session, and there's no clear-cut decision as to according to whom the halacha is, but again, I reiterate that in my own opinion, I think that Rav Shimon represents the more logical aspect of it because of the fact, I mean, that according to the Torah, it is supposed to be a test. And if it's a test, then we cannot say that, it's delayed, or maybe there are eight of them someplace or other, so just that they're too far away to come, and so on and so forth, you know, the way Rav Sheshes was arguing. Okay? All right. Also, I have to tell you something else. There is also a statement to the effect that after she is taken, the Mayim Hamorim, after she's drunk, right, and there are no immediate effects, then in that particular case, she's Muteres Levala. In other words, she expected to live together with her husband again, and, you know, so that the whole accusation about, you know, her unfaithfulness and so on, has no
even though he brought the charges.
Even
together.
Though he brought the charges, but she drank the Mayim Hamorim and nothing happened to her, then in that case, they're permitted to live together again.
And
before that, if you remember, from the time you know that he instituted proceedings against her, she was there, Sarah Salah, you know, from the time that this the raw, right, there was a witness who came and said that she had been in seclusion. At that point, she was no longer permitted to live with him as husband and wife. But the minute that the Mayim Hamorim has been ingested by her, okay, and there are no ill effects, in that case, so that's why, in my own opinion, I think that Rav Shimon presents a more cogent argument. The other is, you know, a lot of argument, back and forth, very reasoned, and there's no question, you know, that a case can be made for Rav Sheshes, but from the practical point of view, I think that it doesn't hold water. Okay? Alright, so now we continue with the Mishnah, which speaks about and what happens. What is the procedure? This is what the next couple of Mishnahs on the page deal with. Okay? So the first Mishnah, right on the second line over there, begins by saying, Ketzad Oyselah. What is the procedure that he carries on with her? Alright. So the answer is, first thing that he has to do, he brings her to the local Besdin. Okay, and then you know he makes his charge in front over there, and he says, "I have a witness to the effect, you know, that Nistero, that she was in seclusion, you know, together with the man against whom I had previously warned her with, in the presence of two witnesses, you know." So most of those day Talmidei Chachamim. Then in that case, the court now appoints two Talmidei Chachamim, and of course, for what purpose? Well, obviously they are to escort the husband and the wife, and as the mission continues, Shema Yovo Yelehu Badera, in order to make sure that the husband doesn't decide to have relations, marital relations with his wife, while they're on the way to Yerushalayim. So the two Talmidei Chachamim are there in order to make sure that he's not going to attempt
chaperones.
Any arguments on the way. Right?
Chaperones.
Right, chaperones, exactly. Right. But Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says, Omer, right, the Baal or Neman Olehu. The husband alone is trustworthy that he's not going to do anything. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not necessary to have they too, Talmidei Chachamim, go along on the trip. Okay? Rashi, Shema Yovelo Bader, because Shetzorek Lahashkeis of Yerushalayim, Mevesen Agodol, Kedil Kamlan. In other words, why, you know, why, for example, can't the local court do anything more than simply appoint, you know, two chaperones to Talmidei Chachamim to escort them? Because obviously there's only one place where the Mayan HaMorim can be administered. And where is that? That's in Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash. And where in the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is the Beis HaGodol. Now, what is the Beis HaGodol? Now, if you remember, we have different types of Beis Dins, okay? Because the Gemara in the first chapter of the Sanhedrin speaks about the different types of Beis Dins that we have. The smallest Beis Din is a Beis Din of three judges, okay? And this, of course, would be the kind of a Beis Din normally that you would have in a local area, okay? Then, if it involves capital cases or some other cases, but particularly for capital cases, you know, where the punishment could be Mesa, then in that case, the Beis Din has to consist of 23 of given. Okay? But for the gravest types of infractions, and particularly also to resolve, let's say, disputes concerning Shemotim, Shevet Yehuda has an argument with Shevet Shimon or something like that, that has to be decided by the Supreme Court. That's the Beis Din HaGodol of Yerushalayim, which consists of 71 judges. Or there are other things for which they have to be called into a session. As for example, they want to declare war. The king himself does not have the authority to declare war. Mm. He has to consult the Sanhedrin Gedolah. Okay? The same thing is true as far as, let's say, adding on territory to Eretz Yisrael or something like that. It has to be before the Beis Din HaGodol. Okay. So, here too, the Sota has to be tried in the presence of the Beis Din HaGodol in Yerushalayim. In other words, how many judges do we need? We need 71 judges.
Well, how do they arrive at that number, 71 or 23 or something?
Okay. This is a good question. Gemara in Sanhedrin explains why the 23, okay? 23 is because on the basis, remember that it says the word Edo. What does Edo mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Rabbeinu Shalom says to Moshe Rabbeinu after the Meraglim, he says, Ad Masai, Lo Edo Horoa Hazos, right? How long do I have to put up with this evil Edo? So from this, we derive the fact that how much is an Edo? But we know how many spies went. 12 spies went, right? But two came back with a good report. Kolev and Yehoshua, correct. So that leaves how many for the Edo Haroah? The answer is 10. Okay, so from this we know that how much is an Edo? An Edo is 10. All right, now, in the Sanhedrin, 23, which judges capital cases, so first of all, you could have an Edo, which is Bechayevus. In other words, you could have 10 judges who will declare that the person is guilty. You could have Edo Mizaka, in other words, 10 judges who will declare that the person is
not guilty.
And of course, on that basis, you cannot make any decision, right? So, how do we arrive at a regular decision? So, if you say, add one, because we have a klal that says, Akwe Rabim Nahatos, right? In other words, after a majority, you make a decision, so this would seem to be the ideal solution. No, but for capital cases, says the Gemara, it's not enough. Not enough. You have to have at least two more in addition to the 10 who will declare that the person is guilty. Okay?
Or not.
All right.
Guilty.
So that gives us now how much? That gives us
22.
Right? But we have another principle that Gemara says, and namely, Ein Beis Din Shokel. You cannot have a court which has an
even number. Yep,
that's what Shokel means over here. Okay? That's what we do with Shokel.
You have to add one more.
Right. Okay. So you have to add one more. So that's how they derive the number 23. All right. Now you want to know why 71. Okay? So the answer is, if you remember, that Reisha Rabbeinu later on in Chumash Bar Midbar, he complains Rabbeinu Shalom says the burden is much too heavy for him to bear. People are complaining all the time. They say, give us meat, give us this, give us that, and so on and so forth, right? They say, look, back in Egypt we had all the food that we wanted to eat. We had cucumbers, watermelons, and the chweis was not over there, and fish and everything. Life was wonderful back in Egypt. Why did you take us, schlep us out to this wilderness over here? So what did the Rabbeinu Shalom say to him? Es poli shivimish, right? Gather unto me 70 people. So the question only in the Gemara is, actually according to Rabbi Huda, 70 would be the number. However, again, based on the idea of it ain't best in shokel. So in that case, so they decided that 71 would be the correct number for that. So that's how they got around it, okay?
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Nice to slip in all the Gemaras every once in a while, so we have an idea. That's the beauty of learning Gemara, that when you learn one Indian over here, but you really get like a little encyclopedic view of many other different things that
sure.
we have in the Yom Shel Talmud. And at that, we still are floundering around. Okay. All right, now, Ne'eman Aleho, it says, right? It says, Shaloh Yavoh. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he is trustworthy that he's not going to have any marital relations with his wife on the way. All right, then that's going to be challenged in the Gemara, as we'll see in a moment. Okay? Yes.
But earlier we learned that this is one of the exemptions to
the law about the death. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, right. However, we're not talking about over here. Here we have already determined that the facts of the matter are as follows. Number one, you know, this is what he tells the best, okay? I warned her on the basis of the testimony of two witnesses and obviously in the presence of two witnesses, right? That she should not speak to so-and-so and she should not, you know, be in seclusion with him, right? Al-Tadabri, the Al-Tasasri. Okay, so you learned, I mean, Al-Tadabri, to simply say to her, don't talk to him, that means nothing. But the important thing is what? Al-Tasasri. Don't go into seclusion with him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a witness, or maybe I myself saw her in seclusion with this guy for a length of time where the supposition can be that they were up to monkey business, okay? Because remember, that was also a factor. So, if that's the case, now he brings these charges to the Besdin. So what does the Besdin have to tell him? So I have to tell him right now, okay, you should know, my friend, this is the kind of a behavior that means that you have to take Yerushalayim in order to test her. Obviously, the woman says, you know, that it's Talorani.
Right.
Because if she didn't say that, if she said to Be'ani,
we
finished with the business. Okay. But if she says to Horani, you know, that that's not true, you know, I didn't do anything, okay? I'm innocent. So in that particular case, so the Besdin over here, the local Besdin says that, okay, then you have to take Mr. Husband, you have to take her to Yerushalayim, and there she has to go before the Besdin of Godel over there, and the Kohen has to administer, you know, the Mayim HaMa'orim in order to test, you know, whether she is innocent or whether she is guilty. And in order to do that, hold it, please. And in order to do that, so what do we learn from this Mishnah? According to this Mishnah, and in addition, we are supplying you with two Talmidei Chachamim who will escort you on the way in order to make sure that everything is done according to the law and there's no hanky-panky on the way. Okay? All right. Now, David.
Well, I can't find the pasuk, but
yeah.
I had thought that one of the things that we had learned was that if on this journey the husband and the wife had relations.
Right, then in that case,
that,
perfect, yeah.
Yeah, really, then that would be, like, in a sense, slicha, or condemnation. In other words, that the husband had forgiven the wife dropped his accusations. At that point, the whole tekes with the Mayim Ma'orim wouldn't take place.
Yeah, right.
Then why, if that is so, then why does the Beit Din put a as you put it, two chaperones to prevent this from happening. In other words, they seem to try to eliminate that possibility.
Correct. They want to eliminate it because if the test is going to mean anything, then in that case it has to be done in accordance with the rules and regulations. And the rules and regulations are that from the moment that declares before the Besdin, you know, that look, this is what happened, he gives, you know, the recital. I warned her, and she went into seclusion in spite of my warning, and the witness, at least one witness saw her, or at least I saw her, because we said over there that, you know, in the last case, that the Baal is believed. Of course, we also learned, you know, that there is an opinion that says that there have to be two witnesses, not one witness. But nevertheless, they do accept from the point of view of halacha that in this particular case, one witness would be sufficient, you know, for the Nisra. Why? Because it's written over there, the Eid Ein Bo. And they took it out of its usual context to say that Eid, in this particular case, you know, Eid Ein Bo means that you can accept, in this case, the the testimony of one witness.
I was thinking perhaps of another explanation, but again, I don't know what's forthcoming, which is that if the husband, despite nevertheless that these two chaperones are with him, if he then, he and his wife engage in relations, this would go to serve as an exemption, and it would actually serve as an issur, because
I mean, the man himself has to be guilty. So obviously, if he commits something where he's told not to, he's no longer guilty.
It's credibility.
Listen, he's also, but he has to, in a sense, make a very, I don't know how to put this, I mean, he has to make an effort to do this, because it's now in a unique situation.
Yeah,
he's
correct.
Not alone with his wife, so he has to, in a sense, he's showing this, either, as you say, either behavior of his own, or the way I see it, more in line with the American law, this condemnation that by having relations with his wife, he's in these kind of difficult circumstances, he has changed his mind and has dropped his accusation.
Well, look, obviously, whether he's dropped his accusations or not, but the very fact that he engaged in this kind of conduct with her means that he's he's undercutting his own case against her.
So
they're not going to go through then with the Bayim HaMorim, because there's no need. I mean,
as if
he himself said, look, I know, you know, that it's not going to prove anything because my own actions or something like that.